This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. The Biden administration is throwing its support behind efforts to waive intellectual property protections for COVID-19 vaccines in an effort to speed the end of the pandemic. The move comes amid World Trade Organization talks over easing global trade rules to speed the pandemic's end. Still, the administration's warning it will take time to reach global consensus to waive the protections under the WTO rules. U.S. officials say the move will not have an immediate effect on the global vaccine supply. Teams of experts are projecting COVID-19 toll on the United States will fall sharply by the end of July, according to research released by the government on Wednesday. The director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, said, "The results remind us that we have the path out of this, and models once projecting really grim news now offer reason to be quite hopeful for what the summer may bring." However, experts warn that a substantial increase in hospitalizations and deaths is possible if unvaccinated people do not follow basic precautions such as wearing a mask and keeping their distance from others. Egypt said Wednesday that it would impose new restrictive measures amid a spike in coronavirus cases in the Arab world's most populous country. The Prime Minister, Mustafa Madbouly, told a news conference his government would ban all events, entertainment parties, and other gatherings for 2 weeks starting on Thursday. He said restaurants, shops, cafes, shopping malls, and social clubs would close at 9 p.m. daily. For more news, join us at voanews.com. Via remote, this is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is set to arrive in Kiev, Ukraine, where on Thursday he is scheduled to meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky and other officials. The State Department says Blinken will underscore unwavering U.S. support for Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity in the face of Russia's ongoing aggression. The United States is deeply concerned about Russia's ongoing aggressive actions and rhetoric targeting Ukraine, including the increased Russian troop presence in occupied Crimea and around Ukraine's borders. Blinken is expected to restate that the U.S. will not recognize Russia's annexation of the Crimean Peninsula, which Russia took in 2014. He was expected to call for its return to Ukraine. Blinken will also underscore the importance of American economic support for Ukraine. Since 2014, the U.S. has provided Ukraine with more than $4.6 billion in total assistance, including security and non-security assistance, according to the State Department. The group of seven wealthy democracies around the world on Wednesday wrapped up their first in-person meeting in more than 2 years, accusing China of human rights abuses and a crackdown on pro-democracy figures, while voicing concern about Russian aggression against Ukraine. Like foreign ministers from a host country, Britain, plus the U.S., France, Germany, Italy, Canada, and Japan all called on Iran to release foreign and dual nationals they said were being held arbitrarily in Iranian jails. They threatened the Myanmar junta, which staged a coup in February, with fresh sanctions and a wide-ranging final communique covering the world's most pressing geopolitical issues, including climate change and post-pandemic recovery. The United States is making good on its pledge to support Afghanistan's security forces, with military forces even as U.S. and coalition troops continue to leave the country. A U.S. official confirmed to VOA late Wednesday that the U.S. forces are actively carrying out airstrikes against Taliban fighters in southern Afghanistan's Helmand province, where fierce fighting has raged for days now. The U.S. strikes comes as Afghan security forces have come under intense pressure from the Taliban. As always, for more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown reporting by remote, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Authorities in Nigeria's Kaduna State say 27 students abducted a month ago were free Wednesday night.
The Commissioner for Security and Internal Affairs in Kaduna State, Malam Samuel Arun, appeared in the national television to confirm the release of the student. All questions related to releasing the student were technically avoided.
Nigeria's military dismisses any possible coup against President Muhammadu Buhari. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is criticized for undermining the constitution. The WHO says hand washing controls infections and saves lives. And Cameroon separatists say they have intensified their military activities in recent months.
With Cameroon refusing to engage in international dialogue, the only weapon left in the hands of we Ambazonians is to up our military game.
A Kenyan cooperative is helping save an endangered bird, and coronavirus and George Floyd inspired the first virtual edition of the Paris Black Cinema Festival. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Authorities in Nigeria's Kaduna State say 27 students abducted from a federal college of forestry almost a month ago were released late Wednesday. They were among a group of 37 students taken from the school by suspected bandits. On the line from Kaduna City is VOA's Hausa Language Service reporter Issa Lawa Ikara. Good morning, Issa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. What can you tell us about the release of the students?
Morning, sir. As you might have seen or read from social media or other platforms, these students have just been released Wednesday evening. There were 37 before, but you know, five were earlier released and later another five released. Then suddenly yesterday evening, that's Wednesday evening, the remaining 27 were released. That is all we know. They were accompanied to the police headquarters in Kaduna, and the Commissioner for Security and Internal Affairs, Malam Samuel Arun, just informed the journalists that they can't say anything now, but here are the students released and they are going to undergo medical checkups, and the press will be informed later of what really happened. That is all we were told from the government.
The college is located in Kaduna State. What are the authorities there saying about how the release of the students came about?
The authorities have not officially said anything concerning the release of this student yet, only that the commissioner, as I said earlier, informed the journalist that here is a release without saying who participated or who contributed towards the release of the student, and informed the journalist that they are going to undergo medical checkup, and that is all he informed the journalist, nothing more. Even Wednesday night, I called all his numbers, but they were not going through. I had wanted to confirm what really happened and who does or who did what and how, but all the numbers were not going through.
We understand that the Commissioner for Security in Kaduna State appeared on national television late Wednesday night to talk about the release. What did he have to say? For example, do you think security forces could have played a role in the release of the students, or was there a ransom to make the release possible?
Yes, the Commissioner for Security and Internal Affairs in Kaduna State, Malam Samuel Arun, appeared in the national television, and he only appeared to confirm the release of the student. All questions related to whether ransom was paid or whether the government authorities or security operatives play roles in releasing the student were technically avoided by the commissioner. But I have just confirmed from one source that it was a committee with Sheikh Dr. Abubakar Gumi and former President Olusegun Obasanjo and other people that worked it out. They were the ones who played all the roles for the release of this student. But the source who was part of the committee informed me last night, that's Wednesday, that the security, especially the police, participated in all the processes to ensure the release of these students.
That was Issa Lawa Ikara, VOA's Hausa Language Service reporter, speaking with us from Kaduna City in northwestern Nigeria. Nigeria's military this week dismissed any possible coup against President Muhammadu Buhari, saying it is unconstitutional and a treasonable offense. Nigeria has seen growing criticism of Buhari over insecurity in the country and calls by some critics for him to step down or for the military to take charge. Timothy Obiesu reports from Abuja.
The military's statement was a response to a televised commentary by prominent Nigerian lawyer Robert Clark, who suggested the country could collapse in coming months unless the military took power. Military spokesperson Onyema Nwachukwu said the military will uphold the country's democracy and warned against plots to overthrow the government. But criticisms of Buhari's administration by civil societies, political and religious groups have grown in recent weeks due to escalating insecurity. Raphael Adebayo, founder of the Free Nigeria Movement, a civil society group, says the government can no longer handle the situation.
Insecurity in the country has affected every other sector of the country. Our economy is in shambles. Education is in tatters. There is no hope whatsoever. People are depressed. The poor are getting poorer. And the presidency has run out of solutions.
President Buhari, a former military general, was elected in 2015 and vowed to subdue jihadist group Boko Haram in Nigeria's northeast, which has killed over 36,000 people and displaced more than 2 million. But 6 years later, things are getting worse. Boko Haram is expanding its enclaves in the northwest of the country, while banditry, kidnappings, and communal clashes are on the rise. Ariyo Dare is the founder of Center for Liberty and Development, another group demanding the president's resignation.
It is our candid view that the president should resign. He is currently incapable of leading this country. His mental capacity has failed him, so also his frail health has failed him.
President Buhari was re-elected for a second term in 2019. Dare says the president is not likely to willfully resign, but predicts security issues will be a major topic in the next polls 2 years from now.
It is important that whoever is going to succeed General Buhari in 2023 will be such a leader who has shown competency and has been able to galvanize the entire country to be on the same page in terms of fostering our unity.
Last week, lawmakers urged the president to declare a state of emergency over the country's security. On Tuesday, Buhari met with his top security chiefs to fashion a way forward. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Cameroon separatists fighting for independence of the self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia in the country's English-speaking regions say they have intensified their military activities against the Cameroon military in recent months. However, Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the Republic of Ambazonia, is denying that the separatists have been committing brutality against civilians who refuse to cooperate with the separatists. He says it is a common strategy by the Cameroon military to blame human rights violations on what he calls restoration forces. Anu says the only people being captured are Cameroon soldiers and what he calls blacklegs or traitors.
I will basically say that with Cameroon refusing to engage in international dialogue, the only weapon left in the hands of we Ambazonians is to up our military game. And we have been doing so of recent and leaving a lot of damage on the forces or the soldiers of Cameroon. In the coming months, we are going to intensify if Cameroon thinks that they are going to walk away and yoke the Southern Cameroons together with them. We have made it completely clear that will not happen. We will fight tooth and nail to bring down Cameroon and take back our own country. The good thing now, James, is that before we went to Nigeria to buy arms. Right now, we don't go to Nigeria to buy arms. We are manufacturing arms. And our boys have demonstrated their bravery and their resilience, and we are recruiting more Ambazonian fighters to join the ranks.
I think it was sometime last month, April, that our correspondent in Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzeka, filed a report where he indicated that the Cameroon military had rescued some civilians who said they had been captured by your forces. They alleged that they had been tortured, sometimes chopping off their ears and their fingers. Have you captured people in your theater of operation? Have you tortured?
No, James, of course not. The Cameroon army, out of frustration, will do anything and say anything to try to get the international players to paint us as terrorists. That is not the case. The only terrorists in this war are the French Cameroon soldiers. They kill civilians, then place their guns on their bodies. I mean, where does a soldier fall with a damn gun or a gun lying on top of the belly without somebody putting it there? That is in the playbook of La République du Cameroun. So they will go pretend arresting civilians and then put them in the line, take photographs or footages of them, put out and say, this is the work of Ambazonia fighters. Of course it is not. That is what they do, and their motive in doing so is to paint us before the international community as terrorists. We know their games.
Have you captured any individuals or people in your theater of operation, the English-speaking region, who are not, as you call it, French Cameroon soldiers?
The only people we capture are French Cameroon soldiers and what we call blacklegs serving within the Cameroon government. Those are the people we capture. We capture them because this is war. A blackleg to us is even dangerous, more dangerous than a soldier that you capture. The blackleg who doesn't put on a uniform exposes the hideout of our fighters, exposes their plans, and La République comes killing them. So when we find a blackleg or anybody in French Cameroon military uniform, we pick them up and we give them the reward for their betrayal.
Chris, it's always nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 6th. Critics are accusing Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party of seeking to undermine the judiciary after lawmakers late Tuesday this week amended the constitution so that the president can handpick judges. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
The amendments which await President Emmerson Mnangagwa's signature to become law allow him to choose judges for the constitutional, supreme, and high courts without the approval of legislators. Long-time ruler Robert Mugabe had similar powers for years until they were stripped away in the constitution that was passed in 2013. Dewa Mavinga, head of Human Rights Watch in Southern Africa, urged rights organizations in Zimbabwe to challenge the law in court or hold protests.
It is a law that should not be allowed to see the light of day because it undermines the rule of law in Zimbabwe. It is an authoritarian law that undermines the principle of separation of powers because it puts excessive power into the office of the president and strips and weakens the judiciary in the sense that it gives the president the power to appoint senior judges without going to public interviews.
The amendments would also allow a sitting president to extend the age of retirement of the Chief Justice by 5 years. Zimbabwe's sitting Chief Justice, Lukumalaba, turned 70 this month and was due to retire. The amendments bill also extends by 10 years the quota of 60 women in the 350-person parliament. The quota was supposed to end with the current term in 2023. Another change would give the president the right to appoint his two vice presidents instead of the vice presidents being elected. Justice Minister Ziyambe Ziyambe, who is from the ruling ZANU-PF party, told reporters that he was happy about the constitutional amendments.
What happened is very historic. What this basically means is we are now going to remove the contentious running mate clause that was badly drafted. So it's a very joyous occasion. It allows government, even political parties, to start planning for the 2023 elections, knowing fully well that the women's quota is there. Our empowerment agenda is on course.
Opposition leader Douglas Monzoram was one of the chief drafters of the 2013 constitution, but some members of his Movement for Democratic Change party voted in favor of the amendments which passed Tuesday.
The majority of the women in the Senate did vote for the bill. Obviously, it is clear that they were voting for the women's quota. It is not a typical bill in which a leader or leaders of a party would whip people, because that basically means whipping people against their agenda. But we remain fortified that the running mate clause must be reinstated. We also think that the clause relating to the judges has to be dealt with.
Critics say Mnangagwa took advantage of lockdown regulations which forbid protests and introduced the constitutional amendments which have been condemned on social media by the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, and its leader, Nelson Chamisa. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
In marking World Hand Hygiene Day yesterday, Wednesday, the World Health Organization stressed the importance of good hand hygiene practices in stopping the spread of deadly infections. The WHO says this is especially true at a time when the world is battling the coronavirus, which causes the COVID-19 disease. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
COVID-19 has dramatically amplified the importance of hand washing. The head of WHO's Infection Prevention and Control, Benedetta Allegranzi, says this simple action can prevent the risk of transmitting the infection when used as part of a comprehensive package of public health measures.
Effective hand hygiene also prevents any infection acquired in healthcare, the spread of antimicrobial resistance, and other emerging health threats. Hand hygiene is a simple action that has a central role in contributing to quality care and to the whole of society efforts to prevent infection spread and saves lives.
A WHO survey of 88 countries finds low and middle-income countries have made significantly lower progress than high-income countries in implementing hand hygiene and infection prevention programs. The report notes 1 in 4 healthcare facilities in poorer countries does not have basic water services, and 1 in 3 lacks hand hygiene supplies. Allegranzi says the poorer countries lack the money needed to shore up their crumbling healthcare infrastructure. Consequently, she notes, most do not meet the minimal requirements to make a significant dent in reducing often life-threatening infections.
For example, in some low-middle-income countries, only 1 in 10 health workers practices proper hand hygiene while caring for patients at high risk of healthcare-associated infections in intensive care units. While also in high-income countries, hand hygiene compliance rarely exceeds 60 to 70%.
WHO reports every year healthcare-acquired infections affect millions of patients and health workers globally. Europe alone, it says, records nearly 9 million infections yearly. The UN agency says highly effective and low-cost hand hygiene strategies are available that could reduce these infections by half. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
COVID-19 has battered the global film industry, but that isn't stopping an annual Paris-based Black Film Festival from opening today, Thursday, for the first time virtually. From the French capital, Lisa Bryan reports for VOA that this year's edition of Nollywood Week is breaking new ground in other ways.
Bonjour, tu as entendu la nouvelle? La Nollywood Week passe en mode virtuel.
This eighth edition of the Nollywood Week Film Festival is traveling beyond Nigeria's powerhouse film industry to include, for the first time, movies from other parts of Africa and the Black diaspora.
Boys! Boys, boys, boys!
We really need to stop worrying about Dad.
Nollywood Week usually takes place at Paris's La Licante movie theater. But with cinemas across France still shuttered by the pandemic, the festival is going virtual with its new global content to now reach a global audience as well.
We've seen that there's been a lot of development in other cinemas, in the film industry, in a lot of other African countries that are really inspired by what's happening in Nollywood.
Shakira McIntosh is the festival's Dakar-based spokeswoman, and one of the festival's film selections is from Senegal.
People are looking at these big Nollywood films getting onto Netflix, and you know they're saying with their means, or not that much means, actually, they can manage to do really quality things and tell great stories.
Nollywood Week will air nearly three dozen movies, animations, and documentaries from countries like Tanzania, Mozambique, Brazil, and Trinidad and Tobago. The audience can either purchase single movie passes costing under $10 or a full festival pass. Other parts of the four-day event, like conferences and master classes, are free.
Jay has decided that we should adopt a baby.
I have never taken this lead seriously show without consulting you first.
The film industry overall has been hard hit by COVID-19. Nollywood alone, known for its scrappy, low-budget origins, has lost millions of dollars in ticket sales. But McIntosh says the pandemic and other global crises also have a positive side.
This is something that is so surreal in a way and so unheard of, that people are inspired to tell stories that are linked to either COVID or sort of tell stories of this unusual period in our history and how they're dealing with it. You know, we saw what was happening in the US with George Floyd, and that also opened up, I think, a room for people to think a bit about how we tell stories of Black people around the world and what platforms we use to do that.
Nollywood Week runs through Sunday. Its organizers hope next year's edition will be back at the La Licante, but also have a virtual component for its global fans. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And that's it for this Thursday, May 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up on the program, what can Washington do to combat Russian aggression in Ukraine and Russia's efforts to undermine human rights and democracy around the world? We'll talk with two regional analysts about U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken's visit to Kyiv to defend that nation's sovereignty and much more. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. Coming up, a conversation with Elizabeth Newman, former senior Homeland Security official and director of the Republican Accountability Project. She tells VOA that domestic terrorism is on the rise in the United States and that we must remain vigilant against white supremacist and anti-government militia groups. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.